Hello and good morning to Studies Through the Bible of Pastor Zach Ebarb. I am Pastor Zach, and today we are going to be looking at 1st and 2nd Corinthians. So to kind of give you an idea of the church at Corinth, you have a lot of different aspects that go into this. Paul established the church at Corinth over an 18-month visit from AD 51 to 52. And when he gets to Corinth, we have a group of people, a society of people, that are not only deeply embedded in paganism, but their paganism is so bad that there is even a phrase for to live like a Corinthian, which meant to live in gross immorality. There were tons of pagan temples that used prostitution as a form of worship. There was all kinds of just really, really bad things that went on in the city of Corinth. It was essentially a very idolatrous area, immoral area. It was the kind of city that it's kind of like New York City for us. It's referred to as Sin City or Las Vegas, something of that nature. It is very much what the city of Corinth was like. And so when we look at these letters to the Corinthians, okay, to the first church in Corinth, okay, we have a lot of major sin issues that we're going to be looking at. 1 Corinthians specifically reveals the problems, pressures, and struggles of a church that has been called out of a pagan society. Paul is going to address their lives. He's going to address things that they are doing, sins that they're committing, questionable practices that they have, their abuse of the Lord's Supper, and as well as spiritual gifts and some questions that they had asked him, he is going to answer as well. He kind of gives some words on discipline. He also shares words of counsel and answers these questions. So there's no doubt at all, obviously, that Paul wrote the book of Corinth. Pretty much everybody universally accepts that Paul wrote 1st and 2nd Corinthians. Sorry, the book of Corinth, goodness gracious. That Paul wrote 1st and 2nd Corinthians. There's references not only throughout the entire both books that Paul wrote them, but there's also references to extra-biblical literature that talk about that Paul wrote this. A very good example of this was in AD 95 when Clement of Rome mentioned 1 Corinthians as having been written by Paul. So we all agree, 1 and 2 Corinthians, as we're going to talk about these books kind of together today. They were both completely written by Paul. They're dealing with a church that is steeped in and surrounded by idolatry and immorality and was called out of idolatry and immorality that are struggling with doing the right thing, okay? So we have 1 Corinthians is more than likely written around AD 56 or 57 with Paul's third missionary journey, and 2 Corinthians was probably written some 6 to 18 months later. It's kind of hard to pin those two down. Now, Paul established the church in AD 51 to 52, and so not 4 or 5 years later, we are writing a letter to address a lot of questionable things that are going on in the church. Corinth was a city that it had land on the strip between the Aegean Sea and the Adriatic Sea, and because of that, it was a center for trade route passages, for boats. It became very prosperous, and it became a very nice place for luxury. But as it became prosperous and luxurious, it also became very immoral. And so we have Corinth here. We have these cities that are established. And as we are going through this book, the epistle is written very orderly. Okay, it sequentially addresses each individual problem. And then he will go on to kind of begin to answer their questions. So we're going to have, at the beginning of the book, we're going to address serious problems that are present in the church. And then as we're going later on in the book, we are going to start addressing their questions. Okay? So, can I give you a layout? We have an answer to Chloe's report of divisions. This is chapters 1 through 5. Reports of the divisions is chapter 1 to chapter 1 verse 1 to verse 18. And then the reason for those divisions is addressed in verse 18 to chapter 5. Okay? So, he wants to fix right off the bat all of the division that's going on in the church. Then we have answers to problems of fornication, okay? We had incest going on. We had litigation going on. And we had immorality. So there's a lot of disorder in this church. Paul very quickly and very sternly answers all of this in chapters 5 through 7, okay? Then he begins to answer questions about from the church. So we have chapters 7 through 8. We are discussing marriage, how marriage is supposed to work. What do we do with the, you know, if we have two members that are saved and married together, how they're supposed to live. If we have somebody who gets saved but is married to an unsaved person, what are they supposed to do? Then we have, if we have, you know, two unsaved people, how does that work? If we have people that are widowed, how does this work? People that are divorced. So he answers various questions about marriage and how marriage is supposed to be set up by believers in chapter 7 through 8. Then from 8 to chapter 11, we have this discussion of offerings to idols. And what that really means is that we have an issue of, is it okay to go buy cheap meat from the idolatrous temples, or should we only buy it in the marketplace? So we kind of have this question about Christian freedom, and we deal with this very quickly. Chapters 11 through 15 deals with public worship and the conduct of public worship, how we're supposed to do it. We're also going to address the Lord's Supper in this discussion. Chapters 15 through 16, we have the resurrection. And then chapters 16 through the end of the chapter, we have the discussion of taking up a collection for the Church of Jerusalem, an offering to help out a fellow church. So, in 1 Corinthians, these are all the problems that are addressed. We address divisions, we address incest and litigation and immorality in the church. And from there, we begin to answer some questions that many believers have even today about marriage and offering to idols. And, well, when I say offering to idols, I'm for us in the modern day time, it boils down more, of course, to Christian freedoms and whether or not our freedoms override our responsibilities. And then discussions about how public worship is to be conducted, how the Lord's Supper is supposed to be conducted. That's something that people fight over all the time. How is the Lord's Supper supposed to be done? Who can take it? Who cannot take it? The resurrection and discussing future events and what Jesus Christ is going to do. And then even about helping other churches. There's some struggle among some churches where they lose their autonomy, and then they're breaking biblical principles by trying to team up with all these churches and create a super church and all this kind of thing. But then we also have the question of, well, you're not supposed to ignore fellow sister churches, period, and not be willing to help out if they come upon hard times. So there's a lot of very good information that comes from Corinthians that's very relevant today. I'm going to be completely honest with you, listeners. If you live in the United States today, the city of Corinth is very much like the United States as a whole. Here we have an attitude of, we do what we want to do. We have a lot of luxury. We have a lot of prosperity. We live very comfortable lives. We live very easy lives. And because of that, we have a tendency to allow our culture to come into our churches. And I'm just going to break your heart right now. The United States culture is not God's culture. The United States way of doing things and their thought processes, their laws, their ways are the ways of any other lost man, and they're just like the ways of the Corinthians. We don't worship idols anymore, in the sense of we have a god named Molech, or we have, you know, the fish god of the Philistines, Dagon, or, you know, we have a sun god or Zeus or whatever. We don't worship those kind of idols anymore. That's true, but we do worship ourselves, and ourselves have become an idol. Our technology and our sport events and activities and recreation have become idols. There's a lot of things that go on in Corinth that just have a new name, a new face, and a new way of going on here in the United States and all around the world. So for us to neglect the book of Corinthians as being, oh, well, this no longer is applicable to me, these problems they're talking about here, no, they're still very applicable. The attitudes and the culture of the people that this church is surrounded by is the same attitude and culture that we are surrounded by right here where we live. So the book of 1 Corinthians should be not only read and studied deeply, but it should also strike a chord within the hearts of anybody who reads it, because of the fact that this is really a very accurate description of where we live as citizens of the United States, and what it is that we should be trying to focus on and making sure that we keep our culture out of our church, that we make our church God's church, not the United States church. And so when we're looking at all of this book, the book of 1 Corinthians is a very, very good book. It answers a lot of very, very tough, important, key questions that people have, whether they're newly saved or even if they've been saved for a good part of their lives. Sometimes they haven't got the clarity on that. They haven't heard a message about it, or a preacher hasn't taught it, or has never addressed it. And so when you're dealing with especially a culture like ours today, this book is a perfect one to be going through. Right now in my church, we are going through 1 Corinthians. We are all the way through offerings to idols, and we're about to start on public worship and how we're supposed to conduct that, and what it means to worship God, not just, you know, showing up for church, sitting on the pew, listening to Brother Zach, and going home. And so when we talk about this book, it's one that you need to pay very, very close attention to. It's one that I get very excited to get into, because it addresses so many questions that people have today. It's mind-boggling to me just how much Paul answered these questions and laid out probably 99% of the questions that a man's going to get from a church member, all in one book. And so what happens, though, is between 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians, the Corinthian church is swayed by false teachers. Now, we do not have this. Sometimes people like to call 2 Corinthians 3 Corinthians. And the reason for this is that there is another letter that happens between 1 Corinthians and 2 Corinthians that we do not know anything about. All that we know about this letter is that Paul was, he's breathing fire, okay? Paul was very, 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 very angry, is what we know from just a little snippet of information in 2 Corinthians about this second letter, okay? And what happened is between the first letter and the second letter, the Corinthian church is swayed by false teachers who stir the people up against Paul. Okay? Now, I'm going to say this, and maybe I don't have a right to say this, but I think to say that the people were swayed completely by false teachers would not be entirely true. And the reason for this is that, but after you get a letter like 1 Corinthians, after somebody has put in your face and has literally gotten right down eye level with you and has been blunt, he said it with love, and he wanted to grow them and wanted to edify them, but he also said a lot of things that are hard to swallow in the book of 1 Corinthians. when you get to the topic of marriage, guys, I've got people in my church, bless their hearts, I wish they'd let it go and move on. But when we talk about marriage or divorce, they're squirming on the pews. Maybe because they had a problem or an issue that that arose in a marriage, or maybe they've been divorced before. And friends, I'm going to tell you something right now. That's a sin just like any other. And if you've asked forgiveness from God, it's time to move forward. I've got ones that'll be squirming on the pews when we talk about religious freedoms and how their freedom doesn't matter more than edifying their brother. They don't like that. You live in a country that says you. If you have the freedom to do it, you can do it no matter what. But here's Paul saying, no, all things are lawful to you, but not all things are profitable. So we have, there's a lot of very, very in-your-face truths in the letter of 1 Corinthians. So I am sure when the Corinthians got that letter, they were none too happy. And then, of course, having false teachers there to get, try to sway them as the letter indicated as to happening between 1 and 2 Corinthians, it's very easy to be swayed by a false teacher when he's telling you what you want to hear, and the guy who is trying to tell you the truth is telling you a truth that's a very hard pill to swallow. So I hesitate to fully give the false teachers credit for the Corinthian church's behavior between 1 and 2 Corinthians, because at the same time, I know that if I'd gotten that letter, that'd have been very much in my face. It would have been a very hard moment to go, yeah, you're right, Paul. Now, should we do that? Yes, but we're also human beings, and I know how human beings react. I preach to them on Sundays. There's a lot of times I've seen people walk out of church mad as an old wet hen after I've preached a message. I have no idea why they're mad, because when I preach verse by verse, chapter by chapter, so it doesn't look like I'm calling anybody out for any particular reason, or that I know something that I'm not supposed to know, or whatever. I usually know more than they think that I know. But when you're dealing with a book like 1 Corinthians, friend, there's going to be a Sunday at some point in a message out of that book that you're going to hit somebody right in the middle of their heart, or in the middle of their lives, or in the middle of their feelings, whatever you want to call it. So when you have a letter like that come down the pipe, and you have a church that's already got false teachers in it, it's very easy for this church to be completely removed. And they do some really bad things. They claimed he was fickle, proud, unimpressive in appearance and speech. I'm going to take just a moment here. If you're a pastor locally where you are, if you're somebody that's not a member of my church that listens to this, the way your pastor dresses, the way your pastor talks, is completely irrelevant to whether or not they are a good pastor. There are some men that are blessed with charisma and good speaking etiquette and good ideas. Maybe they're funny, maybe they're not. There's some pastors that are skinnier than some of us other big guys, Friends, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Snakes are beautiful creatures. They come in an array of colors. They're sleek and sneaky and deceitful. They can be very, very misleading, okay? You're starting to understand what I'm saying. Appearance and speech, being charismatic, whatever, that is not what makes a pastor a good pastor. What makes a good pastor is if he is preaching and teaching the truth. If he's got a monotone voice, I'm sorry that he has a monotone voice. But you shouldn't be bored because of his voice. If you're hearing the word of God, you should be excited no matter who's saying it. So if you're not excited to be hearing the word of God, maybe the problem's not your pastor. Maybe the problem is you. Paul was a little old guy who was hunched over, who was not very well-spoken, didn't have a lot of charisma about him, didn't have a lot of very good speech etiquette, whatever you want to call it. And even the church fathers will agree, he wasn't something to look at. But when Paul preached with authority, and Paul preached with truth. And if your pastor's doing that on Sunday, and your problem and the reason you're not listening to him is because you don't like how he dressed, whether he wears a suit or he doesn't wear a suit or whatever, or because you got a problem with his voice, or you don't think he's a good speaker, it's time for you to grow up. Because I can tell you something right now. I am sure that you as well are unimpressive in looks and unimpressive in speech. And until you have the guts to stand up and do what that man is called to do, quit running your mouth. That's my sidebar on that. Because for somebody to say that about the Apostle Paul just proves how finicky people are. So, fickle, proud, unimpressive in appearance and speech. Called him dishonest, whew, and unqualified as an apostle of Jesus Christ. Now, I'm going to tell you something. That layout right there, to say to a man like Paul, is a very, very dumb idea. And because of this, Paul sent Titus to Corinth to deal with these people. And upon his return, he rejoiced to hear the Corinthians' change of heart. So Paul sends Titus down there with another letter that we never get to see. I really wish we'd get to see it. I wish there was a 1st, 2nd, 3rd Corinthians. But there's not. So Titus goes down there, and Titus brings some very tough messages and a very tough letter. And as much as we want to laugh and be like, woohoo, yeah, Paul laid out the law, guys, Paul's main goal was to edify this body of believers. So when they have a repentant change of heart, and Titus comes back and tells Paul this, Paul rejoices at their repentance. And so he writes 2 Corinthians to express his thanksgiving for the repentant majority and to try to appeal to the rebellious minority that is in the church to accept his authority. So throughout the entire book of 2 Corinthians, he defends his conduct, his character, and his calling as an apostle, since that's what they were questioning with all of their with all of their attitudes and thoughts. So again, Paul wrote it. Paul probably wrote this one 6 months to a year after 1 Corinthians, which he wrote in 56 to or 57 AD. So somewhere around 57 to 58 AD, he writes this second letter, okay? Now, in 2 Corinthians, it's pretty much a biography about Paul, okay? It talks about numerous references to hardships that he endured, problems that he faced and solved, his call, his conduct. And so when we're looking at this, he's going to talk about giving an explanation for his ministry, the collection for the saints, talking about an offering again to help with church at Jerusalem, and then his vindication for his discipleship, okay? And then, of course, Paul is defending his apostleship in chapters 10 to 13 by a masterful use. I like the way that this book put it that I used to kind of get my thoughts together for these overviews. A masterful use of irony and sarcasm. I really like Paul because I love irony and sarcasm. Sometimes I don't think my church members appreciate it, but that's who they got working for them or working with them, okay? So, particularly, he also has the so-called fool's speech in chapter 11, verse 16 through chapter 12, verse 13. And he mocks the vain preoccupation of some Corinthians with power and spectacular gifts by boasting of his weaknesses and the persecutions he has endured. Let's just say that while Paul may have been unimpressive in appearance and speech, he has always been impressive to me in writing. So let me give you a layout of 2 Corinthians, because that's pretty much the gist of the entire book. It's thanking the ones who repented, and for the ones who didn't repent, I'm going to give you another shot to get your life together. And then he, of course, is addressing that his character, call, and conduct throughout the letter. So, chapter 1 to chapter 2, he talks about a change of his plan and his plans. Chapters 2, verse 14 to chapter 6, verse 11 is the philosophy of ministry, what his ministry is all about, what he's doing. Chapter 6, verse 11 to chapter 8. We have the exhortation to the Corinthians, okay? And this all deals with the character of Paul. Now, chapter 8, verse 1 to chapter 8, verse 7 is examples of the example of the Macedonians. And chapter 8, verse 7 to chapter 10, verse 1 is the exhortation to the Corinthians to take do the collection for the saints, to help take care of that. And then he also talks about going from Ephesus to Macedonia, and his change of itinerary in the first part, and then talks about Macedonia and his preparation for a visit. And then, chapters 10 to chapter 11, we have answers to his accusers. Chapters 11 to chapter 12, verse 14, he defends his apostleship. And chapter 12, 14 to chapter 13, verse 14, he announces his upcoming visit, which is talking about his credentials, okay? And he lets Corinth know that he is going to be making a visit very soon. And so, that is 1 and 2 Corinthians in a nutshell. Of course, as always, during this week, go look over those letters. Use those guidelines to go look at the topics that Paul's talking about. Go if you have any questions about any of those things, go look those chapters over. Go look at what Paul says. If you're not understanding what Paul says on the podcast, there's a little comment bar thing when you come in here to listen to it. If you ever have any questions, of course, I guess I probably should have been saying this all along. If you ever have any biblical questions as a listener, you can comment on there. I'll answer your questions. I'll talk with you. We'll make sure that we get anything straightened out that you want answered, or maybe if there's some concern or misunderstandings that's going on during the podcast, just let me know, and we'll do what we can to help you out with that. But as always, this has been 1 and 2 Corinthians with Pastor Zach Ebar. I hope everybody has a great week. I'll see you next week to begin talking about the book of Galatians. Make sure to read over 1 and 2 Corinthians. Get out of here and go study.